Welcome to The Rink, your weekly source for hockey talk without the entitlement. I'm James Tate Blake Grelian. It's time for another Tweetcast. I've got two great guests this week. Jay Kumar from the Completely Conspicuous podcast joins me to talk about the Leafs. And Justin Goldman, founder of thegoalieguild.com, talks about, well, goalies around the NHL. It's all coming up on The Rink. First person on the Tweetcast today is Jay Kumar. Jay has been on the Tweetcast before, and we only had a brief moment to talk about his favorite team, the Toronto Maple Leafs. And Jay, it's a little bit happier time, I guess, for in Leafs Nation. Maybe not a lot, but a little bit happier.
Yeah, at least there's some optimism now. Whereas last time I spoke to you, it was the beginning of the season, but it didn't look good to me, and it turned out I was right because they went into major tailspin, not winning a game for a month or so, right at the end of October. But they've won a couple more now, and they're playing a lot better than they did then. So there's hope in Leafland.
Yeah, I was actually at the first game that they won against the Ducks, and right. It was one of the worst games I've ever seen, and mostly because the Ducks were just so bad that night.
Yeah, I watched that game on TV, and I was shocked at how poorly they played and just taking undisciplined penalties. Scott Niedermayer taking undisciplined penalties.
How often does he's a veteran guy. He should he should have known better some of that.
Yeah.
I remember Wisniewski got a cross checking just as he was going, or no, it was a slashing. As he's going to the bench, he smacks a guy with his stick for no good reason, just as he's skating off the ice.
Yeah, it's the kind of stuff the Leafs usually do. So.
Well, my thing was that they with that game was that it was the return of Brian Burke. It was the return of Francois Beauchemin, and in the first commercial break, they kind of had a video honoring them and welcome back. And then as a special added bonus, they gave them the Leafs the game.
Yeah, there you go.
But,
take the game.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's kind of, that's a little snarky. I mean, at the time they hadn't won a single game. Now, at this point, they've won three games. One of which I was really happy with, which was the win over the Detroit Red Wings, where they just basically owned the Wings.
Yeah, that was last Saturday, and it was fun. It was really the big difference has been the goalie, Jonas the Monster Gustafsson. Highly touted rookie free agent out of Sweden that they signed in the offseason, essentially as a backup for Vesa Toskalov. And Toskalov, of course, started out the season pretty poorly and then got hurt.
Yeah, that sounds really weird to hear somebody say that, that he was going to be the backup, and all of a sudden, where's Toskalov now? He's been playing horribly.
Yeah, he's supposed to. He's back now. He had a knee injury. The first, second week of the season, and he just came back, and he actually is supposed to start either tomorrow night against, I think they're playing Chicago tomorrow night, and then Calgary Saturday, so he's supposed to play one of the weekend games, where, and everybody in Toronto's kind of like, no! but Wilson says he wants to get him in there, so we'll see how that goes. But Gustafsson is really, he's a big goalie, and he covers a lot of net, and he moves really well side to side. He really takes up a lot of space, and he's very calm in the net, and he really, you can see the confidence of the team really rising just having him in there. So it's he's made some huge saves. Even the other night they played Minnesota and lost 5-1, but he made a lot of big saves early in that game, and the team just didn't play well, and there were kind of cheesy deflection goal, things like that. You really can't blame him for that loss, but he's really brought new life into the team. So I think they've had seven games in a row with a point, at least a point, including those three wins. So, they've turned it around. I mean, they're only, believe it or not, they're only seven points out of a playoff spot. So.
That seems pretty crazy right now. I mean, of course, we're sitting here only 16, 17 games into the season at this point. But even that seems, you know, for a team that only has three losses, there's only 7 points out from the playoff spot. Now, obviously, that's going to get a little bigger, you know, later on. But it also helps that when you play the Carolina Hurricanes, who've you know, who's in their last 10 games are 0-8-2. I think they've lost. Oh, they've lost like 12.
Yeah, I can't believe how bad they are. And, you know, especially the way they finished last season, you know, they finished pretty strong. I mean, the conference finals, you know, losing to Pittsburgh, and, you know, they were, I don't know what happened to them.
Ward
hasn't had, and then he's hurt now. He had that nasty skate injury, you know, but he's out for a while, and they're just, man, they're hurting.
They're handing out points like they're Christmas presents, and it's just...
For 7 points.
Yeah, that's it. 2-12-3 at this point. That's that's awful. it's got to be kind of funny to be able to like see them coming up on the schedule and say, hey, look, we're going to, you know, we have a chance tonight. We have a real solid chance tonight.
Like they turned back into the old Whalers.
I think they brought those new Whalers jerseys might be nice for them too.
There you go. I like
so the jerseys. So we're looking at Toronto, and one of the things for me with Toronto has been the forwards have seemed really, I don't know, that the offense has seemed extremely disappointing, that they've almost been invisible for the last couple of years. And now, you know, you finally have Phil Kessel's in the mix, and his first game in, he doesn't get any goals, but 10 shots on goal. Does it feel, I mean, does it seem like, okay, this really is the guy who's going to help our team out, or are you feeling kind of cautious about him?
Well, I'll tell you, I live in the Boston area, so I watched him play for the Bruins, you know, a bit over the last few years, and he never struck me as a dominant offensive player, but, you know, it's funny watching him his first few games in the league. He's really made a difference as far as, you know, a guy who is unafraid to shoot, you know, take a shot, create off from all over. He's fast. He just scored his, he's got 2 goals, 2 assists in I think 3 games, 4 games. And he's just, you know, he's still kind of getting his fitness level up. You know, he hadn't played in 6 months, but you know he's making the rest of those guys confident. And every time he's out there, he's creating offense. So, you know, I don't know if he doesn't match up. I don't think yet to the level of a Matt Sundin when he was there. I mean, he was, you know, a top level star forward when he was there. But certainly, you know, Kessel's only 22. He's only going to get better. And, you know, it's now that he's finally on the ice, I think, you know, Leafs fans can at least feel a little bit better about that trade, because for a while there, it was just, you know, they were losing games and the Bruins were just, you know, Bruins fans were laughing at me here because, you know, they're like, thanks for that, you know, number one overall pick. But I think Kessel, you know, he makes a big difference. Now, the rest of the team, you know, watching the game the other night, God, they miss so many. They take so many shots that don't hit the net. It just blows my mind. A guy like Lee Stempniak, who just can't hit the side of a barn sometimes. But
Eddie from the Puck Podcast and I were skating a couple weeks ago, and he demonstrated that Lee Stempniak shot on corner for me, and it was pretty funny.
Yeah, he did it the other night. He just like, I don't know. But Kessel is a threat. He is, you know, he even when he doesn't score, he's creating stuff, and he's, you know, defenders are going to him, and it's freeing up other guys to do stuff. So, you know, whether, you know, the rest of the team can kind of click and, you know, behind him is another question, but so far so good.
My question has always been about Jason Blake. He's kind of had, there's always been that promise of Jason Blake and what he's going to bring to the team, but with the Toronto Maple Leafs, he just never seems to live up to that. Is that just overextending our expectations of Jason Blake, or is he actually kind of is he playing within himself right now? Is he really kind of showing all that he has to give right now?
Well, I mean, that's sort of been, you know, this is his third year in Toronto, and last year he actually led the team in scoring. You know, granted that was only like 50-something points, but, you know, he is dangerous when he puts his mind to it. The guy's got speed, and, you know, he drives the net. And he used to take a lot of shots. I don't know, that first year, either, I think he took like over 300 shots, but, you know, he's another guy who kind of, he'll take a shot from anywhere. It doesn't matter, you know, he can be behind the net and he'll try to shoot it, but he has been clicking well with Kessel. He's been playing with Kessel and John Mitchell, who's a young forward, and they bumped him up to center, those two. And Mitchell's more of a, you know, he'll dig the puck out for those guys and, you know, kind of try to get them the puck. And so far, you know, they're looking pretty good. So, you know, if this is what it takes to get Blake going, and you know, hopefully it'll... Because, you know, with the speed that he and Kessel have, and Mitchell's not, you know, not a slow guy either, I mean, that's a pretty decent first line for them. It's certainly much more than they had 2 weeks ago. So, but, yeah, you'd like to see Blake doing more, and hopefully you will. He only has, like, 2 goals so far this year, so.
What about the defense right now? I mean, Mike Komisarek, Thomas Cabrelle, Francois Beauchemin, that's nothing to sneeze at. Jeff Finger's not my favorite defenseman in the world, but, you know, then, I mean, especially not for that money, but.
Yeah, that was a stupid contract. Well, Cabrelle's playing out of his mind, especially offensively. He's really, he had a stretch there. I think he had 13 points in, like, 3 or 4 games, mostly on the power play when they started to win. Actually started, I think, in that Anaheim game. He had 5 points in that game, and he just has kept it going. And, you know, he's a great power play quarterback, just really smooth there. But he's, you know, he seems like he's playing with a lot more confidence this year. Last year he kind of had an off year, and, you know, he seems to be stepping up a little more as a leader. You know, he's the longest serving Leaf now. He's been there for about 10 years, and, you know, he's just a really good, slick defenseman. But, you know, obviously needs a guy, you know, kind of a grittier, more defensively minded guy to play with him. And, you know, they've got a few guys like that now, and Beauchemin and Komisarek. Unfortunately, Komisarek just got injured. He tore his quad the other night, so he's out for like a couple of weeks, I guess. But, but yeah, Beauchemin's looked a little better. You know, he's every once in a while he makes like these just boneheaded plays. Like he'll just, you know, throw it up the boards when there's nobody there. I don't know, but overall, he's looking more comfortable. You know, Luke Shen, who is their touted rookie from last year, has struggled so far. They've been kind of riding him. He hasn't been playing as physically. He seemed to play a little better in the last week, but then that game against Minnesota, he was kind of terrible. So I think they're keeping a close eye on him. And Finger, I think, sat out for, I don't know, like 7 or 8 games in a row just because they had a surplus of guys. And he just got back in the last few games and actually has generated a little offense. So now he's definitely sticking around with Komisarek out. There's Ian White is actually a guy who, you know, came up through the league system, sort of smaller guy, but good skater, good offensive stuff, presence, and a decent defensive defenseman. So he actually has been one of the better players, even through the bad times this year. So it's kind of nice to see him do well.
I don't know if you pay attention very much to the the minor league system of the Leafs, but they have the Toronto Marlies right there. It seems like a really good plan. I mean, there's your team. They're right there. They're in a market where you can keep an eye. You know, you can keep an eye on them. You can bring them over really easy. But over the last several years, it really hasn't seemed like anything's been produced from that minor league system. Is that was that just the general manager looking instead towards the outside world to find free agents or trading rather than building from within? Was that a philosophy thing, or was there really just not that much going on in the system?
It's a little of both. They, for the longest time, you know, pre-salary cap, pre-lockout, they were, you know, one of the biggest spenders in the league. And so inevitably, come the trade deadline, they would trade a bunch of their draft picks for, you know, Owen Nolan or Brian Leach or some guy who was like in his mid-30s, you know, who could be like the last piece of the puzzle to get him over the top. And it, you know, never ended up working out. But
you know, that sounds exactly like the Colorado Avalanche and what they were doing pre-cap.
Yeah. Well, it worked for them. But
well, it worked for them until the cap came along. And right. You know, it's funny because I feel like in a way I'm answering what I just asked you, but instead saying it about the Avalanche, in that, you know, they tried to, you know, as soon as the cap ended, all of a sudden they really had nothing to work with and nothing to build with, and the house of, you know, the house of cards tumbled down.
Yeah, you know, it's they were always, you know, getting these guys. We got Ron Francis this last year. You know, they really loaded up on the old dudes, but you know, they had the core of like Sundin and you know, even Gary Roberts and, you know, Cabrera and you know, these guys like that. But then, you know, they would surround them with guys like, you know, Igor Korolev and, you know, Robert Reichel, all these, you know, Michael Renberg, you know, these guys who were good, you know, 5-6 years earlier, but were kind of, you know, playing the way out of the NHL. So, you know, you could see them kind of, for a while there, they were a decent team, but, you know, they would always beat Ottawa in the first round and then kind of get stuck. So, you know, they made it to the Final Four a couple of times, you know, in the late 90s, early 2000s. But, you know, you could tell they weren't a, you know, cup contender. So at least now they're kind of being forced to develop some decent players in their system. And, you know, even though they've traded away some picks for Kessel, you know, at least he's only 22, you know, it's not like they traded for you know, a guy who's, you know, in the stages of his career. So
yeah, which we've seen over and over, and it's kind of that rent a player, but you're using a pick to do it, and it's not
right.
Yeah. No, I understand that's, and you know, those as many picks as they traded for Kessel for, you know, and then signing him to a big contract, it kind of seems like at that money, I'm trying to figure out how exactly to put this. It almost like you're signing two guys in one, you know, and I mean that in the bad way, in that, you know, you gave up picks for the guy and you have to sign him to high dollars. And,
right.
And that just seems like a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, it is a lot. And, you know, it's one of those things where, it's a risk, but, you know, I think Burke's way of thinking was, this is an elite forward. We don't have really any of those right now, so let's get one, and, you know, hopefully we'll improve the team enough. You know, I mean, I think primarily he was picking up defensemen in the offseason, you know, shoring up the defense, which was admittedly terrible last year. And, you know, getting guys like Komisarek and Beauchemin and even to a lesser extent, Gardner will be, and then signing Gustafson, and Toskola's coming off hip surgery, so supposedly he'd be better. You know, their thinking was, we're going to be better, we're going to give up fewer goals this year, but now we need to, you know, find somebody who can score some goals. Hey, here's a guy, Kessel, who scored 36 goals at the age of 21. You know, so you can only get better from here. You know, and they also feel pretty good about some, you know, some of the younger guys that they've signed, either drafted or signed, you know, free agents out of college. Burke's big on scouting college players, and he picked up guys like Tyler Bozak, Christian Hansen in the off season from the U.S. college system, as well as you know, getting Gustafson from Sweden. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think, and also they had Victor Stahlberg, who was out of UBM, who they drafted actually a few years ago, I think in the sixth round, and who kind of blossomed into a Hobey Baker finalist last year for UBM. So, you know, he started out the year in Toronto and looked pretty good. He got leveled the big hit, I think, in his second or third game, and kind of he came back and wasn't quite as effective, so they sent him down to the minors. But you know, he'll be back because he, you know, the guy can fly and he's big and he can, you know, he can score. So he was, I think, their leading scorer in the preseason, which obviously is different hockey, but, you know, there's a lot of hope there. So, you know, with those guys. So I think Burke's thinking, you know, we can kind of, you know, build a close to 500 team now, and then, you know, hopefully we can add these pieces from the minors in the next couple of years. You know, they drafted a kid, Nazem Kadri, out of the OHL, and he was pretty impressive in the preseason. They sent him back down. He's only 18, but you know, he's a guy who did not look uncomfortable skating with the big boys. So you know, there's hope on the horizon. You know, I don't think they're expecting to contend for a cup, in, you know, anytime soon. But you know, 3-4 years down the road, you know, that's where they hope to be. So.
Is this kind of a fan base that's able to look at it that way right now? I mean, obviously, over 40 years from their last cup, which, you know, then again, there's the Chicago Blackhawks who, you know, it's been longer, but still, you know, it's a pretty demanding fan base at this point. Do you think that they're going to be as patient? Or do you think that what are they going to do? They're not going to take to the ice with spears and torches and take the bench. But
I mean, you know, they've grown accustomed to see some pretty terrible hockey over the years. I mean, the 80s were pretty much uniformly horrible Leafs teams. There was one team that had a 500 record, and that was like 88-89. But other than that, they were like just terrible. But you know, they drafted high, and then they brought all these kids up and played them all when they were way too young, and you know, then end up trading them, and they became good players elsewhere. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I think the fan base is knowledgeable, and you know, they know if you're just, you know, selling them a bag of crap or if you're actually doing something. And I think, you know, Burke obviously came in with a lot of fanfare and, you know, a lot of all this talk of truculence and pugnacity and all that stuff. You know, he's great with the quip, but, you know, they can see he's doing something too. He's trying to build something. And, you know, obviously, the first few weeks of the season, it looked like he wasn't doing too good a job, but, you know, he was kind of just saying, you know, give it time. And, you know, it's starting to look like it can work. I think, you know, if they see that kind of, you know, progress, and, you know, we've had, you know, crappy seasons the last couple of years. I mean, last year was pretty much, you know, they knew it was going to be a rebuilding year right from the start. You know, they were pretty much just saying that. Whereas, you know, Paul Maurice was like, we're going to make the playoffs, you know, a couple of years ago. It's like, what are you doing? But, you know, I think they're on to something. I think the fans are, you know, as long as they start playing like the way they have in the last week or so, as opposed to the first week, you know, they showed some life and they show some effort and, you know, they win some games. You know, people jump on board. So.
Plus looking at next year's, just looking at NHLnumbers.com, they say that, there are 11 UFAs next year, which in some teams that would be cause for concern. We only have so many people signed, but for Burke, it seems like that's more, that's actually good for him because now he will have some more freedom to make some moves if he wants rather than the contracts that he was already saddled with and didn't necessarily want.
Exactly. Like maybe he goes after a guy like Mark Savard who would be a free agent, I think, after this year, you know, or somebody who, you know, I don't think their long-term plan is to have John Mitchell be Phil Kessel centerman, but, you know, I'm sure they're going to try and make a move, you know, with free agency. So, you know, I think, yeah, like you said, you know, they were kind of fashioning the team where, you know, they'll let some of these guys go and then they'll, you know, hopefully replace them with better players. So,
taking a look, if we were to look like a month ahead right now, rather than looking towards next year, where do you see this team? Do you think that they're going to start to level off more now that they have it's only 3 wins, but, you know, they're still getting points. Do you feel like this is a team that's going to start settling down soon?
Yeah, I do. They've definitely been playing better up until the last game. You know, they had their penalty kill, which was horrendous the first couple of weeks. really had studied. Obviously, a big part of that, your best penalty killer is your goalie. But, you know, Gustafson has given them, you know, some big saves when they need them. But they've also just been playing better. And, you know, with even that last game, they were, you know, it was 1-1 after two. You know, there was the, they got a 5-on-3, and Minnesota got popped in a couple of goals, and then, you know, played that Minnesota game. And, you know, once they get a lead, even without Lemaire there, they can still play that game, shut down hockey. So, but yeah, I think they're starting to get some confidence now. You know, they've got a number one goalie now, who they know can win games for them. So I think, you know, I think they're going to be, you know, I don't think they're going to, you know, challenge for the division title or anything, but, you know, they're going to be tough to play. You know, Detroit found that out the other night. So, they've got a test, you know, they've got Chicago and Calgary this weekend, which are, you know, two really good teams. So, you know, we'll see how they handle those tests. I mean, they're a team where offensively they've got to cash in their chances. And if, you know, the other night they had a lot of chances that they just, you know, either, you know, hit posts or miss the net, and, you know, they've got to bury those chances. And if they don't do that, then, you know, it can't always be Kessel, you know.
Yeah.
They're gonna run into trouble, but I think they'll at least be competitive, which is, you know, really all you can ask for if you're a Leafs fan right now. So.
As a Leafs fan, what more could you want?
Yeah, well, you know, you want more, but you know, you can only get so much out of the collection of players they have. But
that's true. Well, Jay, thanks a lot for doing this with me.
No problem.
Yeah, Jay Kumar. His blog is called Kumar's Bliznog. You can find that at jzkumar.blogspot.com. He also is the has a podcast, a non-hockey podcast, but come on, check it out, please. It's great. It's called Completely Conspicuous. And you can find him on Twitter at Coomdog, KOOMDOGG. I'll have links to all of that at the Rink podcast site. Jay, thanks for talking about the Leafs with me. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And on the line, I have Justin Goldman, founder of thegoalieguild.com and also host of Avalanche Weekly on Mile High Sports Radio, which is 1510 on the AM dial in Colorado. Justin is, I think last time I had you on, I described you as a goalie junkie.
Yeah, you sure did. It fits me perfectly. Still does,
which is good because I mean, you know, I know that you are a you're an Avalanche fan, but at the same time, your main focus is goalies. You play goal. I know that you keep track of who's playing with what gear. You keep track of who's doing what on your website, including scouting reports and the like. So it's nice to have somebody on that I can pick their brain about goalies. And right now there seems like a whole lot is going on with goalies. I think the best place to start for me, at least, is in Carolina with Cam Ward and his injury that's going to keep him out for a little while.
Yeah, and that was a very, very tough injury to watch as a fan, as a goaltender, as a Hurricanes fan. I mean, it was a very, very dicey play. Let's not kid ourselves. I mean, anytime you have Rick Nash flying through the crease, it's going to be a tough situation for a goaltender to deal with. And, you know, you've got to feel so sorry for Cam Ward because he hasn't played that terrible for the Hurricanes, who have now lost 13 straight games. And he's an excellent goaltender. Let's not kid ourselves. And he is probably one of the most underrated goalies when it comes to talking about those tier one netminders in the NHL. And it's just so funny because, well, it's not funny, but it's just so interesting because this is something that has happened to Cam Ward before, against the New York Rangers a few seasons ago in Madison Square Garden. And, you know, I don't know if it has something to do with his pad setup or what kind of pants he wears, but you got to think he's got to add some extra protection in that area because you just can't have that happen. And, you know, thank goodness that it wasn't more severe. And, you know, the more I read up on the situation, it sounds like it's not as bad as we originally thought. And you just hope for a speedy recovery for one of the premier netminders in the NHL and someone who's, you know, battling right now to make that Team Canada squad for the 2010 Olympics.
Yeah, and I think what a lot of people forget is that, you know, he gets cut on the knee by a skate, and obviously, you know, knees and around the knee is a pretty sensitive area, but it's not like this is ice that's been made from Aquafina water bottles. I mean, these guys are spitting on it, there's metal shavings on it, there's, you know, all the puck and tape and everything that that basically contaminates the ice out there. And I know one of their big concerns was infection, and that was part of why they kept him out. The other part, of course, being you know, you can't really play goal if you have stitches in that area.
No, you really can't. And I mean, that whole area is so crucial for a goaltender, whether it's a surface cut like he had or, you know, one of the toughest injuries for a goaltender to deal with is the meniscus in your knees. And, you know, we're talking about Carolinas, and a goalie who has suffered a tear in his meniscus is Manny Legacy. And, you know, anytime you're talking about knee injuries, like you said, or, you know, a very deep laceration on the thigh, the inner thigh or the knee, you just got to be very careful with it. And you have to take your time. And, you know, that just makes it even more difficult for the Hurricanes because time is a luxury that they do not have right now.
No, it's not. And, you know, and that time has kind of forced their hand. In that you mentioned Manny Legacy and his previous injury. Well, look who's replacing Cam Ward, and that is Manny Legacy right now. He's been signed to a one-year contract, $500,000. And the interesting thing to me is where this kind of places him when Cam Ward comes back. The contract is a two-way contract, which means that he gets paid less if he's sent back down to the AHL. And the situation in Carolina has been that the backup situation hasn't been good either.
No. Michael Layton, who is Cam Ward's original backup, is a decent goaltender, but one who has not played very many games in the last three or four seasons that he's been in the league. And, you know, I've scouted Michael Layton for a few seasons. He's a very athletic, agile goaltender, but like I said, he's kind of like Josh Harding in a way, where he's behind an elite number one goalie who plays so many games and so many minutes. He just doesn't have a lot of experience at the NHL level, and as good of a goaltender as Michael Layton is, when you get into a situation where you do have to play a lot of games and you do have to step in as a number one goaltender, it can be a very tough situation when it comes to, you know, the mental toughness side of things. So I think the reasoning and the logic behind bringing Manny Legacy in into the Carolina Hurricanes organization makes a lot of sense. You know, Legacy is a veteran guy. He brings that calming influence to, let's face it, a team that is playing downright awful right now. They can't find a way to do just about anything, whether it's offensively or defensively, to win a game. And so I understand that side of signing Manny Legacy. You know, it is only a one-year, two-way deal for $500,000. But personally, I didn't like the signing whatsoever. You have a very good young short-term prospect in Justin Peters. This is a kid who has great numbers right now in the AHL, one of the best save percentages out there in that league. And you know, I'm a big, big fan of what's called positive reinforcement. And, you know, giving those prospects an opportunity to show what they've got. And, you know, I'm sure you and I sooner or later will be talking about Tyler Wyman, a tremendous young goaltender in the Avalanche organization.
Oh, I sure hope so.
Yeah, who literally has been rotting in the AHL. And I don't mind using that term because the Avalanche have had numerous opportunities to give this guy a chance to play some NHL games, but over and over again, they've just passed it up, and they haven't given him even a chance to play a full game. And so, you know, me personally, as a guy who scouts goalies and who loves to see young guys get an opportunity to play, this is why I have a problem with signing Manny Legacy. You know, I mentioned his meniscus tear that happened a few seasons ago, and the fact that, you know, Legacy is an older guy who's obviously on the tail end of his career. And all of a sudden, when you bring in a guy like Legacy, what type of negative reinforcement does that send to Michael Layton and to Justin Peters? You know, all of a sudden you have a chance for both of those guys to come in, and it's still early in the season. It's not like Carolina is fighting for a playoff spot in the last 5-10 games of the regular season. You know, we're still in mid-November right now, and these guys aren't even going to get a chance to show what they've got. And, you know, obviously Layton is going to get a chance to play a few games. But that's kind of a negative reinforcement to both of those guys. And you know, I have no idea what GM Jim Rutherford has said to the goaltenders in this situation, mm-hmm. but just from where I'm at on the surface, it just seems like the wrong move to me. And you kind of saw it last night in that loss to the LA Kings. You know, Manny Legacy was very scrambly in the first 5 minutes, and although he made a lot of saves in the first period, he wasn't very timely, and he didn't look like he was any stronger than he was in the last two seasons.
With Manny Legacy, the book on him has mostly not been about his style, though. It always seems to be people complaining about him personally. He had some rather, I guess, outward issues in St. Louis, and there was more fan speculation about his about him being, you know, what people were saying basically is a cancer in the locker room. Do you buy any of that? Do you see any of that from him?
You know, when it comes to a guy like Manny Legacy, this is a goalie who is very vocal, who is a fiery guy in the locker room, a fiery guy on the ice. You know, every goalie hates to lose. Every goalie hates being benched. And I think most of it has to do with the fact that Manny Legacy is frustrated. You know, he was frustrated last season because he had some very awkward injuries. I mean, let's not forget how it happened. He came to step on the ice after Sarah Palin gave a introductory speech or something like that, slips on the carpet and really messes up his leg and his knee. And no one's going to enjoy an injury like that, let's face it. And so that just has to be a very frustrating time for Manny Legacy. You know, going back earlier in his career when he was with Detroit, played really well, put up great numbers, but what goalie doesn't put up good numbers on a defensive team like Detroit and a puck possession team like Detroit? And that's always been the knock against Red Wing goaltenders, whether you're talking about Mike Vernon or Chris Osgood or Dominic Hasek or Cujo or any of the goalies that have played there, you know, over the last 10 years is, oh, they're on such a good defensive team. It's all about their defense. You know, you could stick any goalie in Detroit and they'd win a cup. That's a very tough thing for a goaltender to go through once they're out of that Detroit system. And so Manny Legacy goes to St. Louis. He still has a respectable number, still is playing great, but the injuries start to mount up, and he's only getting older, and his style necessarily didn't really get refined or improved as he got later on in his career. So for me, you know, I do buy some of the things that came out about the things he was saying in the locker room, but I don't look at it as Manny Legacy being a bad guy or, you know, stating some things he shouldn't have stated. I really see it as a goaltender who wants to play a ton of games, knows he's a talented goalie, but is just sheerly frustrated with the way things have gone and things that were sort of out of his control.
That sounds exactly like another goaltender right now, and that's J.S. Chiguerre at the Anaheim Ducks, who's been coming out lately and saying that, you know, he's still a number one goaltender, and he's not having any fun. And essentially, it seems like he's talking around, dancing around without actually saying that he wants a trade.
Yeah, and you know, this is something you just cannot do if you're a goaltender like J.S. Chiguerre. And, you know, there were some stories printed a few days earlier from a goalie named Scott Clemenson in Florida who did pretty much the same thing. He was dogging on his defense, and in both of those situations, but particularly with J.S. Chiguerre. You know, you cannot say these things to a member of the media that's going to print something in the papers or online, because all it does is cause problems. And the type of problems it causes can be so detrimental to the focus of a goaltender. And you know what? If J.S. Chiguerre believes he's a number one netminder and he wants to be the number one goalie in Anaheim or any other market, the best thing he can do is shut his mouth and open his eyes and stop the puck.
Yeah.
Because anytime you say something like, you know, whether you meant it or you were being sarcastic or whatever, no reporter is going to put little sarcastic quotes around what you say. And so all it becomes is a distraction. And now, instead of Chiguerre focusing on, you know, working hard in practice and doing everything he can to prove to the coaching staff he deserves to start every single game over Jonas Hiller, now he has to deal with the media. He has to come back out and say, oh, I was only joking. I was being sarcastic. I love Anaheim. I still want to play in Anaheim. That is taking away from his focus on the ice.
Yeah.
And, you know, the latest thing is, you know, Jonas Hiller didn't have a great game against the New Jersey Devils. I think it was the first game on a four-game road trip for the Ducks. Chiguerre is back in the lineup. You know, he's back from, you know, I think it was a sickness or a slight injury, whatever the case may be. He's back in the lineup now, and all eyes are going to be on him. And the pressure that he faces in his next start is almost twofold to what it could have been had he not said anything at all.
Right, now he has to actually prove it. And yeah.
Absolutely. And so anytime a goaltender comes out and says things that they end up regretting, it usually is a sign that they're not focused and that they're not, you know, working hard at doing what goalies are paid to do, which is stopping the puck.
Well, and Jaguar's always been one of those goaltenders who doesn't, he doesn't seem able to leave his emotions, you know, on the bench. He, when at the end of the his amazing run in the 2003 playoffs, taking it to Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals, winning the Conn Smythe Trophy, and really being extremely disappointed about not winning the Stanley Cup, the next season he comes along and basically, he flopped. He was really bad, and some of that you could even see it when he accepted the Conn Smythe Trophy, the disappointment. And he had a similar situation when his father died, and which is not, you know, I can't knock that.
I'm not
saying, you know, hey, he should really be, you know, manning up, or that would be horrible. No. But he does tend to keep his emotions with him on the ice. It seems like when something negative happens, it does affect his play quite a bit, even whether it's the game, whether it's his life or whatnot.
Yeah, I will agree with that full-heartedly. I mean, and this is a very tough thing for goaltenders to deal with. Let's face it. I mean, that's why goaltending is such a difficult position, and you see so many goalies up and down throughout the course of a season, of a month, of their career, because of the mental pressures and influences that play such a big role in stopping pucks game in and game out. And, you know, there's another aspect of it with Chiguerre, and, you know, I don't want to go on too long about this, but his style is not necessarily the type of style that wins you do a ton of hockey games anymore. It was a great style in 2003 mm-hmm. and before that, but let's not forget he lost his best and his favorite goalie coach, Francois Allaire, to the Toronto Maple Leafs. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of things that are coming into play here besides just the frustration that comes with losing a lot of starts to Jonas Hiller. And Jonas Hiller is a great goaltender to kind of compare to J.S. Jaguar because they're two different styles. Jonas Hiller's style is one that's very, very advanced when it comes to, you know, the butterfly position in 2009-2010. Jaguar's style is still kind of that, you know, 2005-2006 butterfly style where it's, you know, you hear this term a lot with Jaguar, the robotic style where it's all positioning and there's no reaction or athleticism to the way he stops the puck. And he could have gotten away with that 3 or 4 years ago, but until he refines his style and learns to play the position a little bit differently, I think he's going to continue to struggle, and that's not even including, you know, the drama that's taking place with things he's saying to members of the press. But you talk about Jaguar and, you know, his attitude and how he's a fiery competitor, and you see this with so many of the elite goalies that have won Stanley Cups or won Conn Smythe, and sometimes it can actually be a good thing. You know, maybe this is exactly what Jaguar needs to really kick him into high gear and get him back to the level he was playing at, you know, 2 or 3 seasons ago. But he's walking a very fine line right now. And to me, I just think that Hiller is so advanced in the way he plays the butterfly position. He's such a young, good talent that's only gaining more and more experience, you know, whether he's winning or losing games, that I just don't see Jaguar playing a lot of games. And, you know, by the time the season's done, he's probably going to be on another team.
Which is not going to be easy considering his contract is not exactly the most tradable. He's making $6 million this year and $7 million next year. And considering the way he's been playing, he hasn't been playing like a $6 and $7 million goalie.
Yeah, and, you know, then the question becomes, which team is going to go out on a limb and sign this guy?
Yeah.
And, you know, I talked earlier about, you know, teams giving those stud prospects a chance to play some games so you can see what they've got. And look, I mean, more and more teams are doing this all around the league, whether it's Nashville with Pekka Rinne, or, you know, you can name about 4 or 5 other teams, Montreal with the Yaroslav Halak, you know.
Even though he's backing up in Boston, you've got Rask.
Yeah, Tuukka Rask, who could be one of the candidates for Rookie of the Year when it comes to goalies. And, you know, even in L.A. with Jonathan Quick and Eric Erzberg, there's two very young goaltenders that are doing a great job playing goal for the Kings as opposed to them going out and signing a veteran guy. So for these guys like J.S. Jaguar and Manny Legacy, and the list goes on, you know, you really cannot, and you know, Scott Clemens is the other one I meant to mention. You just can't go out and say those things. You can't show your frustration. You've got to focus 100% on stopping the puck and having a type of butterfly style that works for the way the game is being played right now.
Scott Clemenson's kind of a funny, you know, a little bit funny that he's been getting lit up quite a bit in Florida. And much like what you were saying with Detroit goaltenders, and any Detroit goaltender is going to win in that situation, in the style they play in Detroit. Here's a guy that with Clemenson that came from the New Jersey Devils, a historically very defensive oriented team, and was very successful, extremely successful when Marty Brodeur was injured last season. Moves down to Florida as a free agent, and wow, what happened to Scott Clemenson?
Yeah, and I mean, here's, you know, this is another interesting one because it's so tough for a goalie to change systems like that. And, you know, look back at Chris Osgood's career, and, you know, that's a great way to kind of compare it, because Chris Osgood is the epitome of a pretty focused goaltender and very soft-spoken, never lashes out at his defensemen or anything like that, you know, always focused on his own internal play. And when he was let go on waivers by the Red Wings and went to the Islanders, you know, a very weak team that was just barely clinging on to that, you know, eighth or ninth spot in the Eastern Conference, he goes to the Islanders and ties Billy Smith's records for the most wins by an Islanders goaltender with 32 in one season. And that's because, regardless of the system, Chris Osgood is a veteran guy who's been through millions of different situations and knows that he has to focus on just stopping pucks. Scott Clemenson, on the other hand, you know, he's been all over the place. Let's not kid ourselves. He's been everywhere, but he hasn't had the type of experiences at his age that Chris Osgood has had. And so going from that system from New Jersey to Florida, so very difficult. And, you know, nobody likes to let up a lot of goals and come off a strong season and then really just tank it, you know, the first two or three starts of a season. But this is just all part of being an NHL goaltender. And when Scott Clemenson comes out and really, you know, gives it to his defensemen in the press, and then you hear the reaction from his head coach, it's so difficult to stay focused. And I must have said the word focus 20 times tonight already, but the reason is because it's so crucial to an NHL netminder making the timely saves and staying consistent. Right. And, you know, that's what's very important at this level is consistency, focus, and poise. And if you can have all three of those things, and, you know, ironically, they're all non-statistical factors in an NHL game, more often than not, you're going to be on the winning side of a lot of hockey games.
Well, they're non-statistical until they become the statistic that really makes or breaks your team and makes or breaks your play. I always think back to the playoffs with the Ducks. Ducks versus Canucks, and it's overtime. Roberto Luongo's in net. He thinks that there should have been a penalty called. He's kind of waving around going, hey, that should have been a penalty. Ducks score, game over. And it was pretty much because he lost his focus on the play itself and on the game itself. And that ended their playoff run. And that was it.
Yeah, you got it. That's a perfect example. And, you know, I'll never forget that one because it's just, it proved everything right there. And, you know, that's why I have so much fun, you know, covering the goaltending position, because, you know, anyone can go online and find statistics and, you know, really pull out different kinds of trends that you see, whether it's, you know, goalies against their former teams or, you know, how they play on the road, et cetera, et cetera. But what it really comes down to with any goaltender in any situation is are their eyes on the puck? Are they making the timely save? And are they being distracted by things that they cannot control? Mm-hmm. And in all the situations we've talked about tonight, whether it's Manny Legacy or it's J.S. Jagr or it's Scott Clemenson, all of these goalies are being distracted by things or are being allowed to be distracted by things that are out of their control. And that's why it shows on the ice with weak performances.
Henrik Lundqvist seems like one of those goalies that always seems focused. I don't think I've ever seen him really, you know, get out of the play when the puck is dropped.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that's why Henrik Lundqvist is, in my opinion, maybe besides Roberto Luongo, and, you know, of course you got to throw Marty Brodeur into the mix until he's retired, the best goalie in the NHL. Because, you know, the style that he plays is very unique as far as, you know, he likes to play deep in the crease and, you know, rely more on his reflexes. But, Henrik Lundqvist is the epitome of a focused goaltender, and it's always about him. And when he lets in a goal or he's talking to the press after the game, it's always about, I should have done this better, or I could have done this better, or, you know, I didn't see the puck through a screen on this situation, et cetera, et cetera. It's always about him and what he could have done better. And that's the true sign of a focused goaltender. And you've seen that with the best goalies so far this season. Craig Anderson in Colorado, you and I know this firsthand. Mm-hmm. Every post-game report, it's never about what did the Avalanche do wrong or what could the Avalanche do better. It's all about, well, I could have done this better, or, you know, this was a soft goal that I allowed. I can't allow that to happen. Or, you know, I'm taking this on a game-by-game basis. I just got to rebound and get ready for the next game. And that's why he's only lost, you know, now three games in about the first 19 games of the season.
Yeah. It's you know who else reminds me of that? As you mentioned, or as you were talking about that, I was thinking of one of my favorite goalies and current Vezina reigning champion would be Tim Thomas. He always seems like he's always focused on what he's doing rather than what everybody else is doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that's a great point that you bring up with Tim Thomas, because here's a goalie whose style is completely out of whack.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he's not a butterfly goalie. He's a nothing. He's a Tim Thomas goalie. You know, he is in a realm by himself. And the last time you saw a goalie like Tim Thomas, his name was Dominik Hasek,
yep.
And he was winning Vezinas as well.
Yep.
And so that's absolutely a great point that you bring up, and I'm glad you did, because you know, the story that you hear now that, you know, Dominik Hasek is out of the league and he's in the Czech Republic playing hockey over there, trying to make it for one last Olympic run, is all the players talked about this. Dominik Hasek never gave up on a puck, and in practice he was almost harder to beat than he was in a game, because he worked so hard and he was so focused on the puck. You know, and you always hear the old adage, you know, you play like you practice. Well, there's no better example of that than Dominik Hasek.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the things you see in Tim Thomas's play, how he's sprawling all over the place and he's never giving up on a puck, it's a lot of the same things you saw with Dominik Hasek when Dominik Hasek was in net.
Yep. Yep. No, it's true. It's, you know, and with Tim Thomas, I mean, he's one of my favorite moments with Tim Thomas was when he checked, I believe it was Jason Blake, as Jason Blake was driving the net with the puck. And, you know, that's got to be the most unconventional save I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a, you know, what's that old saying? I'm not going to be able to remember it right now, but, you know, sometimes you can surprise players, and other times you get caught doing things you shouldn't be doing. But Tim Thomas is the epitome of a goaltender that just wants to stop every single puck and has that fierce intensity about him that just makes him so difficult to beat, regardless of the style that he plays.
Mm-hmm.
And he frustrates shooters. I think he must be the most frustrating goaltender to play against, because the shooters don't know what to do. I mean, sometimes you can read a goaltender, and sometimes there's books on goaltenders, like where to shoot. And, you know, an example of that is Craig Anderson against the Blackhawks. Craig Anderson used to play for Chicago, and if you watch the shootouts, you know, every single game they've played this year between the Avs and Chicago have gone to a shootout. But all those shootout shots were going blocker side low. And that's the book on Craig Anderson. But I don't think there's a book on Tim Thomas, because every time someone comes down to shoot on him, no matter what type of move they're going to pull, he's going to do whatever it takes to get a pad on the puck.
Yeah. Yeah. I like what you, I had to look this up because I couldn't remember who it was, but I liked what you said about you play like you practice. And I was thinking about the NBA player, Allen Iverson, who is exactly the epitome of that, you know, who didn't show up to practice, didn't care about practice, and basically has always had that promise and never really fulfills that promise, because, well, you play like you practice. If you don't show up at practice, you ain't going to show up on the game. One more goalie I wanted to talk to you a little bit about, and just, you know, kind of find out what's happening with him is Cristobal Huey in Chicago. He's kind of been the goalie, the dog goalie, got the big contract. Nobody felt he deserved it. Really, you know, left the door wide open for Hobby Bullen to make his resurgence and take over, like, you know, as Hobby Bullen did. And yeah, what's going on with Huey right now?
Well, you know, it was a very tough start to the season for Huey. He faced a lot of difficulty just getting focused and getting into a rhythm at the start of the season. And, you know, from a technical standpoint, Cristobal Huey is one of the best butterfly, you know, pure Quebec butterfly goalies out there. He uses it extremely well. He's extremely, extremely effective with it and very efficient with his movement. And when you play that type of pure butterfly style, it's all about rhythm. And if you don't have that timing down and your footwork isn't perfect, you're going to struggle to make, you know, consistent saves or win some games. And that's exactly what happened with Cristobal Huey. I mean, his first three games, he let in 9 goals and didn't face very many shots. And so his statistics looked terrible for a goalie who had a huge contract. And, you know, you throw into the mix Antti Niemi, a very raw Finnish goaltender who has 0 games of experience at the NHL level. And all of a sudden he wins a couple of huge games, you know, one in his native hometown in Finland and one here, you know, on the road in Edmonton. So, you know, that combined with the struggles that Cristobal Huey had the first 3 or 4 games of the season really made it look a lot worse than it actually was. But you got to give Huey a lot of credit because he stuck to it. He didn't delineate from his style. You know, he didn't get rattled by what was being said by the fans or the media or the press or anything like that. And all of a sudden, I think, you know, I'm looking at his game by game stats right now, and all of a sudden it happened on October 24th against Nashville, 27 save shutout, and everything turned around from there. He went on to play another great game where he beat Minnesota 3-1, had another game after that where he only allowed 1 goal in a 2-0 loss, and just from that point forward it seemed like it finally clicked for him, and his timing was much better and his confidence came back quickly, and he turned back into the goalie that he was when he played for the Washington Capitals. So, you know, I think a lot of it was just, you know, things kind of got blown out of proportion for a little while, and, you know, the Chicago fans are very, very passionate, and they don't take failure lightly at all, which, you know, no fan should when you have that type of a contract. Just ask the Avalanche fans when it comes to Paul Stastny. And so, you know, Huey is going to be fine. He's such an elite goaltender when it comes to the style of butterfly that he plays. And you just have to expect that he's going to win, you know, 30, 35 games and be totally fine. But the biggest thing for him, obviously, is the playoffs. That's when it's really going to come down to making every single timely save and the big save when it comes to winning playoff games. That's really the big test for Huey this season.
Yeah, we'll see what he does. I think it's going to be an interesting season for him. Justin, thank you very much for joining me. I really appreciate it. You can go back to sitting on the couch with Manny Fernandez and watching hockey games.
Poor guy, huh?
Yeah, exactly. I don't think there's a lot of chance for him this season unless somebody else gets severely injured.
Yeah, exactly. Who knows? If Manny Legacy can find a job and make $500,000 the way he plays, then there's actually some hope for Manny Fernandez. And, you know, this is the way the season has gone with, you know, we talked about this last time, the crease crashing and the traffic in front of the net. You never know, so we'll have to wait and see.
Well, as I like to say, if there's hope for Manny Fernandez, there's hope for me.
Justin, yeah, me too.
Justin, thanks a lot for joining me. I appreciate it. Justin Goldman is the founder of thegoalieguild.com. Go there to find out anything you want to know about any goalie in the NHL and beyond. Also host of the Avalanche Weekly on Mile High Sports Radio, which is AM 1510 in the Colorado area. Justin, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Hey, no problem, man. Anytime. Keep up the good work, and I look forward to hearing more of your shows.
That does it for this episode of The Rink. The Rink can always be found at www.rinkpodcast.com, where you can find links to everybody we talked to today and find out how to subscribe in iTunes. You can find out about our next Tweetcast at our Twitter feed, which is twitter.com/rinkpodcast. You can call us at 845-704-RINK. It's 845-704-7465. And you can email me at rink@rinkpodcast.com. Thanks a lot for listening to The Rink. Thank you.